I want to encourage you to open your Bible to the book of Obadiah. You'll find him tucked away in the Minor Prophets. It's just one chapter long, and in fact, that makes Obadiah somewhat of the answer to a trivia question. What is the shortest book in the Old Testament? And that'd be the book of Obadiah with just one chapter. But if that's all we know about the book of Obadiah, we are really selling ourselves short. All of the minor prophets are very rich in the message that they have to give to us that was pertinent at the time they were delivered through the prophet. All of the messages are applicable to our lives today, and that's true. Just as true with the book of Obadiah as it is with any of the other books of the minor prophets. Now, to better understand the message and the reason for the message that was delivered, we need to understand some about the conflict between the nation of Edom and the nation of Israel. The animosity between these two nations can be traced back to a sibling rivalry that began in the womb of Rebekah, Isaac's wife. Back in Genesis chapter 25, he married Rebekah and she was barren. And Isaac prayed that God would open her womb, and he did, and she conceived, and all was well. But as the pregnancy progressed, Rebekah knew that there was something going on. There was something wrong. She prayed unto God and expressed her concern unto God, and God told her that there were two nations striving against one another in her womb. She was carrying twins. And they were striving together even in the womb. And God said that the younger will serve, or the older, rather, will serve the younger. And that was just the opposite of the way things would have been back then. The firstborn would have had that right and that privilege, but God said no, that the older is going to serve the younger. Many of us are familiar with the fact that Esau sold his birthright to his brother, his younger brother, Jacob. And that when it came time to secure that birthright, Jacob tricked his father with his mother's help. And when Esau learned about this, he was furious. So much so that he was intent on killing his brother Jacob when his father had died. And so, at his mother's urging, Jacob fled. He left for some 20 years. Now, the brothers reconciled. When Jacob came back to the land of his father, Esau went out to meet him, and they reconciled. But the descendants of these two brothers did not reconcile. They fought with each other for centuries. It's interesting, in the book of Ezekiel, chapter 35 and verse 5, Edom is condemned by God for hating Israel with what is called an ancient hatred. They kept that hatred for generations, so much so that God called it ancient. And when God calls something ancient, it's ancient. There was that ancient hatred that Edom had toward Israel. The events that are spoken of in this book cannot be dated positively. Many of the minor prophets, when the prophet begins, he identifies himself in relation to the reign of the kings during his life. And so with that, we're able to date the book of Hosea and the book of Amos. But that's missing in the book of Obadiah. We don't know when it was written. We don't know exactly when these events took place. But the message is plain and clear to understand. God is bringing judgment against Edom because of their sins they've committed against Israel. There are two sins in particular that Obadiah identifies, and we're going to look at these sins. We're going to see just what it is that brought these sins about, how it was that these sins were expressed towards Israel. And then along the way, we're of course going to be looking at ourselves as well, and making sure that we're not guilty of doing the same thing. The first sin that we read of that Edom is guilty of is the sin of pride. We read of that in verses 2 through 9. I want to start just by reading verses 2 through 4. Obadiah, there's just one chapter, so Obadiah verses 2 through 4. Behold, I will make you small among the nations. You shall be greatly despised. The pride of your heart has deceived you. You who dwell in the clefts of the rock, whose habitation is high, you who say in your heart, who will bring me down to the ground? Though you ascend as high as the eagle, and though you set your nest among the stars, from there I will bring you down, says the Lord. The prophet says in verse 3, the pride of your heart has deceived you, has blinded you. And pride does that. When we in our pride elevate ourselves, we put ourselves up at a level where we don't see clearly. And one thing we don't see clearly is we no longer see God clearly. That is, God is out of focus. God is distorted, and we no longer see our need for God. We no longer see or feel our reliance upon God. In our pride, we lift ourselves up to where we feel self-sufficient. And if we don't need God, then it's pretty soon we no longer acknowledge God. And that is setting ourselves up for a failure. And that's what happened to Edom. But also, when we elevate ourselves, not only does God get out of focus, but other people get out of focus as well. And we can begin to look down upon them and begin to mistreat them. And of course, that's exactly what Edom is doing with Israel. We are rejecting, when we give in to pride, we are rejecting God's place, rightful place in our life and in our heart, and setting ourselves up for failure. There are a number of things that caused Edom to be lifted up in their own eyes and gave them a false sense of confidence. And the prophet identifies what these things are. The first thing would be the physical location in which they lived. Their physical location gave them a false sense of confidence. The Edomites dwelt in the mountainous region that was located just to the southeast of the Dead Sea. This was, in that day, it was a highly wooded area. Since then, the timber has been stripped from this land, but it is still a very rugged mountain range. The Edomite plateau is over 5,000 feet above sea level, with the highest point being 5,600 feet. You notice in verse 3, the prophet addressed those who dwell in the clefts of the rock. Especially to the southern part of Edom, there were these sharp cliffs. And there they would dwell in those cliffs. The rugged nature of the land with its high sheer cliffs and narrow gorges between provided natural strongholds and places for refuge. It was a physical fortress. Those who lived there, who inhabited the top of that mountain, knew others would have a hard time getting up to them, and so they felt safe there. It was impregnable in their eyes, in their mind, and it caused them to be lifted up in their own sight. So much so in verse 4, it says, God says, though you ascend as high as the eagle, where the eagle flies up to the mountaintops, if that's where you're building your nest, but no, they felt as if they were living among the stars, even higher than that, as high as anyone can go, that's where they felt that they were. But the Lord says, I can reach you. And it's from there that I will bring you down to the earth. The Bible teaches us repeatedly of the danger of pride. Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall, Proverbs 16 and verse 18 says. Take this passage here in Obadiah, where they were lifting themselves up to the highest mountaintop, and God says, I'm going to bring you down from there. Take the action that is found in the passage in Obadiah and contrast it with what is written in Peter, 1 Peter chapter 5. Peter here writes and tells the recipients of his letter to clothe themselves in humility. 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 5 and 6. Likewise, you younger people, submit yourselves to your elders. Yes, all of you be submissive to one another and be clothed with humility, for God resists the proud. That's exactly what he was doing to Edom. He's resisting them. God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. Let God put you in the right place for you to be. Don't take that upon yourself to do. What were the Edomites doing? They were lifting themselves up, and God said, I'm going to bring you down. Instead, what God would tell us to do is you need to humble yourself and allow God to elevate you to where you truly should be. I want to tell you, it's going to be much better for us if we're elevated by God rather than cast down by God. So let's humble ourselves. Let's humble ourselves and allow God to lift us up. What caused Edom's pride? Well, it began with their physical location. But there were more contributors to their pride. The prophet goes on to mention in verse 7 that they took pride in their allies. See, there were many nations that were around Israel and around Edom. And sometimes these nations, to exist in peace, they would make covenants with one another, treaties with one another. And oftentimes they'd make these covenants, alliances, treaties with one another in opposition to another country. And Edom apparently had done that, and they felt confident in that, in those alliances they made with other people. Look at verse 7. All the men in your confederacy, and that word confederacy in the New King James Version, translated from a Hebrew word that means treaty or covenant. All the men in your confederacy shall force you to the border. The men at peace with you shall deceive you and prevail against you. Those who eat your bread shall lay a trap for you. No one is aware of it. See, again, they're blinded. They're blinded in their pride to what their allies are really doing. The problem is that the Edomites made these alliances with wicked people, wicked nations who did not honor these covenants. And when it became advantageous for them to break the covenant and turn against Edom, that's exactly what they did. They deceived Edom, they betrayed their trust, they turned against them, and eventually they drove them off of their land. In their pride, Edom was blind to this treachery, and they fell into this trap. The Bible tells us that we need to be very careful who our close associates are. Evil company corrupts good morals. We're not to be deceived. And we need to be friendly. We need to be kind and friendly to all people, but we need to be very careful who we allow to be close to us. We need to be very careful who we would be close friends with. We need to choose the right people. Edom had made bad choices regarding their allies, and this led to their pride and to their downfall. But also, their wisdom. If you look at the next verse, verse 8 says, will I not in that day, says the Lord, even destroy the wise men from Edom and understanding from the mountains of Esau? All of the ancient nations, the rulers there, would surround themselves with counselors. They would have wise men who would advise them. Remember when Moses went to Pharaoh. Pharaoh had his magicians. He had those who were in his court. When Daniel went before King Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar had his advisors. They couldn't tell him what his dream was, but he had those wise men that he surrounded himself with. No doubt, the Edomites had these wise people as well. Didn't mention this morning, but you remember of the three friends that Job had, one of them was a Temanite. Teman is a city in Edom. And so here were these friends of Job, Job being the wisdom literature. These men were coming to Job to try to help him, to impart some wisdom to him. But the problem is that this is the wisdom of the world. Esau never had any regard for God, certainly didn't care anything about the promise that came through the birthright. He sold that for a bowl of soup. So it shouldn't surprise us that his descendants had no need for God as well. So whatever wisdom they had, it was worldly wisdom. And worldly wisdom will not allow one to stand before God. The Bible mentions in many different places. I want to look at 1 Corinthians chapter 1. Now, there are many different places we could go to look at the contrast between the wisdom of the world and the wisdom that comes from God. You could perhaps look at the whole book of Proverbs and see that contrast laid out there. I want to read one verse from 1 Corinthians chapter 1. 1 Corinthians 1 and verse 20. Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? Left to itself, the world grasps for wisdom. Now, it can seek knowledge. We can obtain knowledge through our eyes and through our ears, but wisdom comes from the fear of the Lord. And whenever the world, people in the world, discount God and do away with God, they're left on their own. And no wonder the idea is that this universe has been around for billions of years. And we are just the latest model in the millions of years of genetic mutations happening over and over again. It sounds ridiculous, and it is. God tells us where we came from. God tells us why we are here. We can get knowledge from the world. We can get facts from the world. But let's turn to God for our wisdom. When we rely upon ourselves or we rely upon the world for our wisdom and use that to make the decisions in our lives, we're setting ourselves up for failure. That's what the Edomites did. And then finally, their pride also came from confidence in their physical strength. In verse 9, it says, "Then your mighty men, O Teman, shall be dismayed, to the end that everyone from the mountains of Esau may be cut off by slaughter." The mighty men here would be the men of valor, the champions that were heroed by all the people, held in high esteem. And every nation had these mighty men. Remember, the Philistines had Goliath. He was their champion. For a while, Israel had Samson. He was their champion. Every nation had their mighty men. And if a king had enough of them and could make up an army out of them, no one could stand against him. Apparently, that's how the Edomites felt. They had their mighty men, but their mighty men would be no match for God. God says they will be cut off by slaughter. So here, their pride had deceived them. And pride can come from many different sources. And we need to learn from this. Pride is one of the three avenues that Satan uses to tempt us to sin. 1 John chapter 2 and verse 16, the pride of life, along with the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes. And it can come through all these different avenues, where we are physically in our lives, who our friends are, how educated we are, what kind of strength and advantage we may have. Any number of things can feed into this pride. But what we have to remember is that we have to keep ourselves humble. Let's humble ourselves, let's lower ourselves, and allow God to exalt us. Otherwise, it will be God who is bringing us down, and how great that fall will be. But the second sin that we read of the Edomites committing in the book of Obadiah is what God calls violence against their brother. In verse 10, "For violence against your brother Jacob, shame shall cover you, you shall be cut off forever." Violence against their brother Jacob. Now what is mentioned here in these verses in that following this in the book of Obadiah, the prophet describes an actual event in which Jerusalem was attacked and plundered by an enemy. Now, there are a couple of occasions, historically speaking, that this could have been talking about. We don't know which one it is for sure. But from what we read here, Edom did not instigate this attack. There was another enemy that came and attacked Jerusalem and destroyed it and plundered it, and Edom did not instigate this attack. But yet, God still says that they are guilty. Their behavior they conducted in while this attack was happening, God says you're guilty of violence against your neighbor. And that's important. That should catch our attention. Because they could say, you know, we didn't start it. How many times do parents hear that from their children? They hear a ruckus going on, and they come into the room. All right, what's going on? And one of the children will say, just right off the bat, I didn't start it. I didn't start it. Well, the parents don't really care who started it. They're going to put an end to it. And the Edomites here, they could say, we didn't start this. Why are you getting on to us about this? But God says you're guilty of violence against your brother, even though they didn't start this. So I'm kind of interested. What did they do? What did they do that God would say you're guilty of violence against your brother? Well, the first thing they did, God says, you stood on the other side. Look at verse 11. In the day that you stood on the other side, in the day that strangers carried captive his forces, when foreigners entered his gates and cast lots for Jerusalem. Well, indeed that happened. That there was a stranger, there was another people that came into Jerusalem and burst through the gates and took away the people captive and plundered the city. But that wasn't us. That wasn't us. We weren't involved. We stood on the other side. One translation says that they stood aloof. They purposely distanced themselves from what was happening to leave the impression that they weren't involved. But here's the problem. They didn't try to help. That's what God is holding against them. No, they didn't start it, and they weren't involved in it as it was unfolding, but neither did they try to help. You stood aloof. You kept yourself separated from it. You didn't come to their aid, so much so with the very last phrase here in verse 11, even you were as one of them. Remember the parable of the Good Samaritan in Luke chapter 10? When that noble priest came upon that man who was beaten and left for dead, he walked on by. And the Levite came, and at least he went over and looked, but still he walked on without helping. Didn't come to their aid. Didn't do anything to help them. What does the Bible say about that? In the book of James, chapter 4, and verse 17, James chapter 4 and verse 17 says, therefore, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin. To not help someone when they need help and we're able to help them, that is sin. We need to be of a frame of mind that we're going to help, and we know that there are people in this world who are looking to take advantage of those who would step in and try to help them, but we dare not become cynical to the point that we don't offer help to those who genuinely need it. That's one thing that was happening here. The Edomites were not helping at all. In the year 1770, a man named Edmund Burke wrote a letter to one of his friends, and he is credited with this statement. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. That still holds true today. The only thing that's necessary for the triumph of evil is for good people to do nothing. And to begin with, that was the charge that God had against Edom. You did nothing. But it wasn't just that they did nothing. There's more. You look at verse 12, they delighted in the misfortune of Jerusalem. There they were up on their mountain, and there they are pictured as looking down and seeing Jerusalem going through its worst time ever, and they're pointing and laughing. They're delighting in this. Again, Obadiah, and let's look at verse 12, "But you should not have gazed on the day of your brother in the day of his calamity, nor should you have rejoiced over the children of Judah in the day of their destruction, nor should you have spoken proudly in the day of distress." Here there's a triad of charges that are leveled against the Edomites here in verse 12. The first one is, you should not have gazed at your brother. Some translations say gloat. And that's the idea. The word simply means to look, but the context here would imply that they're taking pleasure in what they're seeing. Look, they're finally getting theirs. It's about time. Look at how the city is burning. Look at how they are suffering. The next phrase, that you should not have rejoiced over the children of Judah in the day of their destruction, taking malicious delight over the afflictions of the righteous. Proverbs chapter 24, verse 17 and 18 says, "Do not rejoice when your enemy falls, and do not let your heart be glad when he stumbles, lest the Lord see it, and it displease him, and he turn away his wrath from him." How easy it is for us to fall into this trap, to look upon a person or perhaps a nation as being an enemy of ours. And when they suffer some kind of misfortune, all right, they finally got theirs. That's displeasing to God. We saw that God sends His rain on the just and on the unjust. All of the world is God's creation. He doesn't take any joy in us taking joy in someone else's misfortune. So they gazed on, they rejoiced in their misfortune. And then the last phrase, "nor should you have spoken proudly in the day of distress." Well, some translations say boasted. They were boasting. What kind of things were they? They were cheering on the enemy. Way to go, destroy Jerusalem. Well, what kind of things were they saying? Well, perhaps Psalm 137, verse 7. Gives us some insight to this. Psalm 137 and verse 7, "Remember, O Lord, against the sons of Edom, the day of Jerusalem." And that fits very well what we're reading here in Obadiah. Jerusalem, the day that Jerusalem was falling, the sons of Edom were doing something. They were rejoicing. What were they saying? They were saying, raise it to its very foundation. The idea of raise is to scrape it bare, like you would take a razor and shave your face. Raise it. So there they were, cheering on the enemy, completely destroy this city. So, no, they couldn't say we didn't have anything to do with it. God heard them cheering them on. God saw the way they were looking. God heard what they were saying. God heard the cheers that were coming from them. It is sinful for the Christian to take delight in the suffering of other people. Even if the suffering is justified, it is still sinful, it's still wrong. We are to, as we read at the beginning of worship services, we are to love our enemies. Love them. Proverbs 17, verse 5 says, "He who mocks the poor reproaches his maker. He who is glad at calamity will not go unpunished." Let that sink in. That's a challenging verse. Again, when we see our enemies fall, when we see those who are hurting others finally get theirs, there's a temptation to rejoice. And God says, no, don't do it. There's plenty of other things for Christians to rejoice in. We should not rejoice in the misfortune and suffering of anyone. That was one way that Edom was doing violence against their brother. But here's another thing, as we look at verses 13 and 14, they didn't just stay up on the mountain. They couldn't say we didn't get involved, because they did get involved. Look at verse 13. You should not have entered the gate of my people in the day of their calamity. Indeed, you should not have gazed on their affliction in the day of their calamity, nor laid hands on their substance in the day of their calamity. What were they doing? They didn't just stay up there in the mountain. They left and they went down into the city and they did what we today would call looting. They went into that city that was being destroyed. Doors were being busted open. Walls were being knocked down. Goods were there for the taking. And they went and they took their share. They looted them. And God says you shouldn't have done it. You should have stayed up in your mountain. You shouldn't have dare entered into the gates of the city of my people. You shouldn't have looted them. But they did. And not only did they do that, look at verse 14. You should not have stood at the crossroads to cut off those of them who escaped, nor should you have delivered up those among them who remained in the day of distress. Not only did they loot their possessions, but they also, when they saw the enemy go into the city and saw the people of Jerusalem escape and leave, they went and cut them off and rounded them up and delivered them to the attackers. They weren't going to let them get away. They were going to make sure all of them suffered because of that ancient hatred. When you look at Amos chapter 1, verse 6 and verse 9, indicates that Edom was among the nations around Israel that was involved in a slave trade. So they're doing here what they had a practice of doing, rounding up people and putting them into slavery, selling them off to others. This was the violence they were doing to their brother. What does the Bible say about this? Well, the Bible tells us not to steal. If it doesn't belong to us, it's not ours, and it's wrong to take it. It doesn't matter what the circumstances are. That's not how you get justice. That's not how you get reparations, taking something that doesn't belong to you. Thou shalt not steal, the Ten Commandments say. The New Testament reinforces that. Let him who stole steal no longer. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 28. We're not to steal and take things that don't belong to us. And regarding rounding up people who are trying to escape and handing them over to their tormentors, well, a passage as simple as Matthew chapter 7 and verse 12 takes care of that, takes care of that offense. Matthew 7, verse 12, therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets. We're to treat people with kindness. We're not to steal from them. We're not to make things harder for them. I don't know about you, but I look at this passage and I'm challenged. Could God ever say that I am responsible for violence against someone? I didn't do anything, God. That's exactly right. You didn't do anything to help. Well, you know, it was just harmless laughter. I didn't mean anything by it. But was I laughing at someone when they were down, when they were suffering their misfortune? Did I go by and take something that didn't belong to me, innocent enough? Am I guilty of violence against my neighbor? Obadiah opens our eyes to that and challenges us with that. So we bring this study to a close. We've identified the two sins that the Edomites were guilty of, but the book of Obadiah also announces their judgment that would come upon them from God. For the day of the Lord upon all nations is near. As you have done, it shall be done to you. Your reprisal shall return upon your own head. They were going to get what was coming to them. They were going to reap as they had sown. They had lifted themselves up. God said, I'm going to bring you down. They had done violence to their brother. God would allow other nations to do violence to them. Let's back up into verses 5. We'll look at verse 5. At verse 5, it says, if thieves had come to you, if robbers by night Oh, how you will be cut off. Would they not have stolen till they had enough? If great gatherers had come to you, would they not have left some gleanings? Oh, how Esau shall be searched out, how his hidden treasures shall be sought after. They went down to Jerusalem and looted the city. They picked up what they could carry and took it back up. And God says, if only that's what I would allow to happen to you, but you're going to be completely ransacked. Everything that you have is going to be found and it's going to be taken. You're going to be driven off of your land and you're going to be cut off by slaughter. That's the promise that's made in the book of Obadiah. What happened to the Edomites? Well, in the intertestament period, between the Old and New Testament, in the 3rd century B.C., the Edomites were driven off of their land. They were removed from the mountains of Edom. By the 1st century A.D., during the time of Christ and the beginning of the church, is when the Edomites disappear from history. The last descendants of the Edomites that we read of in the Bible are the family of the Herods. They are descendants of the Edomites, and they die out at the end of the 1st century. God kept His word. But you know what? God keeps the promises that He made to us as well. Just as the Edomites reaped what they sowed, we will reap what we sow as well. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. Whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. You know what the book of Obadiah shows us that we need to be sure to sow? We need to be sure to sow plenty of humility and plenty of kindness. That's what got the Edomites in trouble. We need to be humble and we need to be kind in dealing with others. Thank you so much for your kind attention. We're going to offer the invitation at this time. Tyler is going to stand up in just a moment and lead us in the invitation song. That would be an opportunity for you, if you are not yet a Christian, to put on the Lord in baptism. We would be glad to hear your confession of faith, knowing that you're repenting of your sins, and we'd be glad to assist you in obeying the Lord in baptism. If you've done that in the past, but you've become unfaithful, perhaps you realize you've got a problem with pride or you've got a problem with mistreating others and need to make that right in a public way, we'd be glad to help you with that. If you're overwhelmed as a Christian and you need our prayers, we'd be glad to pray with you as well. Whatever your spiritual need is, would you let it be made known by coming forward as we stand and sing this invitation song?